not be able to choose. And you don't have to. Stop by often at one of our two locations, Grand or Chippewa on historic Route 66. And remember, whether it's a cone, sundae, or one of Ted's famous concretes, there's just the right bite for every appetite.
It really is good, guys and gals.
Seibergs and Helen Fitzgeralds want to say congratulations to the St. Louis Blue. Join the Seibergs family of restaurants and Helen Fitzgeralds for delicious food, drink, and beer specials. Seibergs and Helen's have the biggest sports bars with more TVs than any other spot in town. Join in on the action during the Stanley Cup playoffs at Seibergs and Helen Fitzgeralds. Go to Seibergs.com or HelenFitzgeralds.com for more information or to find a location near you.
Who's ready for Maryland-style crab cakes? At Surf and Sirloin, it's a true crab cake. No peppers or onion, no filler, just a little egg and breadcrumbs to bind the cake together. The crab cake entree is 8 ounces, of which 7.5 ounces is crab meat. That's how little filler is in there. Surf and Sirloin, located southwest quadrant of Manchester and 270, and serving only USDA prime beef, which you won't find at the grocery store. Surf and Sirloin. For reservations, call 822-3637 or through the app Open Table or online at surfandsirloin.com.
At The Gageworth, you set the standard for exceptional senior living. Their warm residential setting and commitment to personalized service ensure that each resident has what they need, when they need it, and the way they like it. Start with the active routine, relax, and savor each moment. Visit The Gageworth on Facebook or schedule a personal tour on thegageworth.com and see for yourself how The Gageworth does senior living your way.
I walked through a county courthouse square. On a park bench, an old man was sitting there. I said, "Your old courthouse is kind of run down." He said, "No, it'll do for our little town." I said, "Your old flagpole has leaned a little bit, and that's a ragged old flag you got hanging on it." He said, "Have a seat." And I sat down. "Is this the first time you've been to our little town?" I said, "I think it is." He said, "I don't like to brag, but we're kind of proud of that ragged old flag. You see, we got a little hole in that flag there when Washington took it across the Delaware. And it got powder burned the night that Francis Scott Key said, watching it right and say, 'Can you see?' And it got a bad rip in New Orleans, with Pakenham and Jackson tugging at its seams. And it almost fell at the Alamo, beside the Texas flag, but she waved on, though. She got cut with a sword at Chancellorsville, and she got cut again at Shiloh Hill. There was Robert E. Lee, Beauregard, and Bragg, and the south wind blew hard on that ragged old flag. On Flanders Field in World War I, she got a big hole from a Bertha gun. She turned blood red in World War II. She hung limp and low a time or two. She was in Korea, Vietnam. She went where she was sent by her Uncle Sam. She waved from our ships upon the briny foam, and now they've about quit waving back here at home. In her own good land here, she's been abused. She's been burned, dishonored, denied, and refused. And the government for which she stands is scandalized throughout the land. And she's getting threadbare and she's wearing thin, but she's in good shape for the shape she's in. 'Cause she's been through the fire before, and I believe she can take a whole lot more. So we raise her up every morning, we take her down every night, we don't let her touch the ground, and we fold her upright. On second thought, I do like to brag, 'cause I'm mighty proud of that ragged old flag.
Grab your coat and get your hat. Leave your worry on the doorstep. Just direct your feet to the sunny side of the street. Can you hear a pitter-pat? And that happy tune is your step. Life can be so sweet on the sunny side of the street. I used to walk in the shade with those blues on parade. But I'm not afraid. This rover.
That's Mr. Rogers to you, and stay the hell out of my neighborhood.
Crossed over. I'll be rich as
Johnny Carson, the best.
Gold dust at my feet on the sunny side of the street.
It was Johnny Cash with a piece called Ragged Old Flag. It's been around a long, long time. He was a tremendous patriot, Johnny Cash. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the May 6th edition of the Large Morning Show. I'm sorry, the June 6th. I don't know what I'm thinking about. The June 6th edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon. It's D-Day. It's also just another sleepy, dusty Delta day.
It was the 3rd of June, another sleepy, dusty
Delta
day.
That's right. Sorry. 3rd of June. I forgot. 3rd of June. There's no way that we're going to go through this hour, whether you like it or not, without talking about D-Day, and I'll tell you why. Because the more of that that happens where we just kind of gloss over it, eventually it's not talked about at all. We are maybe at tops 10 years away from not having any more living veterans of World War II. I'm going to ramble here because I'm not a historian, and I don't have I didn't major in history. I didn't even graduate from college. So I'm not an expert. There's a lot that I don't know. And if I make some misstatements here, I would love it if somebody would correct me, because the one thing I think that everybody should do, I think we should all want to be corrected when we're wrong. Otherwise, we continue to go through life saying things that are stupid or sounding stupid. When I was a kid, even in high school, even in my 20s and 30s, I didn't pay any attention to things like D-Day. And I don't think millennials now, for the most part, give two hoots about it or know anything about it. I don't know much about it. But as you get older, you hopefully start to realize what a big deal this day was 75 years ago. I don't believe most people, including myself, I really can't even begin to fathom or understand the magnitude of this invasion. My first recommendation is to anybody, watch Saving Private Ryan.
Oh.
Because I've never seen a movie with a more realistic depiction of what it must have been like to land on that beach. And it wasn't just one beach. It was five beaches total. But the biggest loss, most casualties, were Omaha Beach. And the story of how it happened is amazing, to say the least, that we were able to pull off what we pulled off at a tremendous price of about 10,000 lives that were lost in one day. So here, for the people who don't know anything about it, and for any young person who may be listening, or anybody my age who certainly needs to know more, because there's a lot that I could learn. I really do believe what's missing is nobody stops to do D-Day 101 and just break it down in simple terms, because I know so little about the Civil War, World War I, World War II. Thank goodness for people like Ken Burns who come along and do these wonderful documentaries. But here's a little of what I have learned, and if I'm wrong on any of it, please feel free to correct me. What happened here was the Allied forces attack the German forces on the coast of Normandy. Now, the Allied forces meant, Limey, Great Britain. You know who they were?
Britain, America, and Canada, if I'm
correct. And France.
And France, right.
Yeah. You're talking over 150,000 soldiers. And it was a victory that became the turning point for World War II in Europe. And let me say this to millennials or, and I say that because I think when you're young, including myself, you don't care. You know, it's not anything you're interested in. But one of the reasons you should be is for all of you morons who like to walk around with T-shirts with the F word on them, or like to post filthy, nasty things, or say you want to kill the president, whoever the president is, or that you hate him and you wish he would die. Well, the only reason you're able to do that is because you live in the United States of America and because of what happened on D-Day. If we had not been successful, you might not even be allowed to go to church where you wanted to go. You certainly couldn't say anything you want to say because you would not have the freedoms that we have. I sometimes think we have too much freedom. But that's a ridiculous statement, because when you start to chip away at, well, okay, we need to, maybe we shouldn't have freedom of the press or freedoms, or we should limit it, that is the beginning of disaster. The other thing I will tell young people who won't listen, but I'll tell them anyway, is it's very important to know about what happened in history, because if you don't know, then you won't recognize when it's about to happen again. I'll give you an example. Confiscation of weapons. Now, to some people, that just may be, well, it's necessary. We had too much gun violence, and we should take weapons away from everybody. That's exactly what happens when, or before, dictators take over countries. That's one of the things that happen. Then they start taking away freedoms. And the next thing you know, you are controlled, and you are not free. So it is important to know what happened and how it happened, so you can watch for if it happens again. Now, to prepare for this invasion, the Allies brought together troops and equipment in Britain. They increased the number of airstrikes and bombings in German territory. Right before this invasion, over 1,000 bombers a day were hitting German targets. Think about that. 1,000 bombers a day. That's before this D-Day thing took place. They bombed railroads and bridges and airfields and other strategic places to slow down and to hinder the German army. The Germans knew an invasion was coming. They could tell. All the signs were there. What they didn't know was where we would strike. So in order to confuse them, and this is something I just learned recently, in order to confuse them, they deliberately allowed information to be leaked that would indicate they were going to attack Normandy in the north. The D-Day invasion was planned for a long, long time, and actually was almost canceled because of bad weather. Dwight D. Eisenhower was the guy in charge of all this. And by the way, he said, just before the, he says, if this goes wrong, it's all on me. It's my fault. If we fail, and we cannot fail. And he was not about to accept failure. So he agreed to attack despite the fact that the skies were overcast. And it did have some effect on their ability to attack. But it also caused the Germans to think no attack was coming, because they thought, well, it's crappy weather, they're not going to attack. So they were less prepared than they would have been. Unfortunately, they were better prepared than we thought they would be. So here's what went down. There were, did you see that 97-year-old guy who jumped again?
He parachuted out of a plane.
Unbelievable.
Can you believe it? I think there was a 94-year-old with him as well. You imagine that?
Then when he landed, he said, I want to go again.
When the original paratroopers jumped on D-Day early in the morning, like 6:30 in the morning, it was pitch black, dark. They're jumping in the dark, and they land behind enemy lines, and their job is to destroy key targets, capture bridges, so the main invasion could take place on the beach. So they go first. Here's what I didn't know until this morning. They also dropped in parachutes, thousands of dummies to draw fire and confuse the enemy. I never knew that.
Wow.
They dropped, this is how prepared they were. You've got to make up thousands of human dummies, yes, to drop early in the morning so that if they were going to fire, they fired at them and it would draw away some fire. It's brilliant.
It would draw the fire away and they'd waste ammunition. That's
yes.
Genius.
It's brilliant.
Do you understand the whole reasoning of the strategy as to why there was only certain days they could invade because of the positioning of the moon and the tides
yes.
and all that?
I read about it.
I don't understand that.
I just read about it. They tracked it. I mean, they were able to read weather. They didn't have our sophisticated, but they still knew moon phases.
Right.
And based on history, what nights are clear, what nights are crappy. And
what does the moon have to do with it? I can understand tides.
Well, full moon, clarity, night.
Oh.
To see
it. It'll give you a lot of light, right?
But then they invade during the day?
No, they started at 6:30 in the morning in the dark. They jumped in the dark. The paratrooper jumped in the dark.
Got it.
Right.
And then at daylight, about 8:30, I think.
So Scott Sherman is here, and this is like his. He loves.
Well,
this
Scott, feel free
everything.
To join in. He's in the other room, but help me out if I mess something up.
No, you're not messing up anything. You're right on it. And when you were talking about the deception plan, that was called Operation Fortitude, and that was part of the pre-planning of what was Operation Overlord, which was ended up being the Normandy invasion. And what they did, what the Allies did, the British and the Americans in particular, was amazing. Not only did they have double agents, something called Team 20, which was XX, Team Double Cross, which they had a lot of British agents and double agents, like James Bond kind of stuff. Ian Fleming was part of that, the guy that wrote James Bond. But they also did a fake army group that General Patton
yes.
who had been taken off of
yes.
and put in charge of First Army Group, which didn't exist.
No, to make the Germans think it exists.
Inflatable tanks, trucks, jeeps, barracks, ships, all of this stuff. And I just found out myself from a documentary that the King of England at the time, he was in on helping by going to visit these fictitious troops to get the Germans to think he was going to morale boost while they were doing this double cross. It's amazing
to
think
ingenious.
They kept it. It's impossible, except they did it.
Here's why it's impossible. They didn't have any cell phones.
No.
I mean, communicating with each other, making all this work and piece it together with the crude communications they had and the crude avionics in the planes. I mean, come on. They didn't have Doppler radar. They didn't have GPS. They didn't have cell phone. It was unbelievable.
And Frank, you know how they knew the Germans were being tricked is that earlier they had found the German code. They had broken the German code at that Bletchley Park. They had done it with the German Ultra machine, and they had that was so top secret, not even the King knew about that. And so they would send out these messages to make sure that the Germans were reacting and then reading the German breaking their code messages and finding out that, yeah, actually they do believe that it might, that the invasion wasn't going to be in Normandy, but actually was going to be about 200 miles to the east in a place called the Pas de Calais, which was the closest point between England and the coast of France.
I'm glad you pronounced it right, because I always called it the Pas, but it's not. It's French, right? It's the Pas de Calais.
The Pas de Calais.
Yeah. Now, here's another thing that I didn't... I'm almost ashamed to say this. I didn't know this until very recently. I always thought the whole time I grew up, and I'd see depictions of one, and even watching Saving Private Ryan, I thought, well, they stormed the beach like Panama City, or something,
right.
Or the Dominican where we go on vacation. No. Limey, how much beachfront do you think we're talking about here that they invaded?
Oh,
total.
A total space from one end to the other?
In length, how much beachfront?
I'd say at least 5 miles, 6 miles.
Dan, what do you say?
Oh, I think it was more than that. I think it was more like 20 miles.
It was 50 miles of beachfront.
That's incredible.
I'm trying to even imagine.
I know there were 6,000 ships or something like
there
that
were
involved.
You were absolutely right. There were over 6,000 ships. And it just gets more and more interesting. The American troops actually landed at Omaha and Utah beaches. Of course, the biggest number of deaths and casualties is Omaha Beach.
And Frank, Utah Beach is interesting because President Roosevelt's son, Teddy Roosevelt Jr., was the leader of the American forces at Utah Beach, and they were set off course and actually drifted past the main German attack. But he was famous. He was actually 50 years old when he hit the beaches. He was the oldest person that was in the battle. And he was famous for saying, even though they were way off course, the war starts here. And a lot of people give credit to not only General Roosevelt, but also that sort of drifting for the Americans at Utah Beach to have been as successful as they were. And he ended up being killed, I think, about a week later in battle. But Teddy Roosevelt Jr., the son of the president, was one of the main generals that was at that. And Omaha gets its due, and rightfully so. But just so that that's not missed about Utah Beach, right. Very important.
Yeah, and there are actually five beaches. And we'll get to that in a minute. And interesting why they were named Utah Beach, Omaha Beach. They were named, they think, by the generals who general who gave them the name based on people that they knew. There was a guy whose last name was Omaha. It wasn't Omaha, city of Omaha. It was people. They just random names. They needed names. The supreme commander of the Allied forces, which is all of us who went over there, was Dwight David Eisenhower. Okay, who became, as you should know, president of the United States. Here are the other generals, Allied generals. From the U.S., also Omar Bradley, Bernard Montgomery, and Trafford Lee Mallory from Great Britain, blimey. And the Germans were led by Erwin Rommel and Gerd von Rundstedt. Now, to address Tim's question about the moon, they needed the light of a full moon to actually see the attack, see what they were attacking. There were only a few days a month when they could attack with a full moon. Eisenhower went ahead with the invasion, despite the fact that on the night they thought would be perfect, whoops, cloudy, crappy, they went anyway. They wanted to also attack during high tide. Why do you think that would be?
High tide, they can get closer to the beachhead.
That's right.
That is actually not the answer. Oh. The answer is it helped the ships avoid obstacles that had been put in the water by the Germans. By lifting the ships higher, they put some nasty stuff in there.
Wow.
Yeah, the Navy wanted the high tide. The Army Air Corps, when the 101st and 82nd Airborne, wanted the full moon.
Yeah.
And the only 3 days were the 5th, the 6th, and the 7th of June. And if it didn't get pulled off during that time, there's no way they would have been able to do it without it being known.
Now, I'm not picking on Limey, but he is a millennial. Limey, what does the D actually stand for in D-Day?
Well, I'm going to be honest.
Because I'm going to tell you, you don't know.
I don't know, but somebody did just text that over, so
no,
I
don't,
kind
don't
of...
Don't read their text. That's okay. Cheating. Dan, do you know what it stands for?
No.
It stands for day. It actually stands for day. It's sort of redundant. Yeah, day. That term was given to the date of any invasion or attack was given the initial D. So this is D-Day, which seems redundant a little bit, but that's actually what it stands for. People think it means decision day.
Right.
Or no, it's just the D.
And Frank, day. They had had other D-Days. They had had one in Sicily. They had had them at Anzio. But this was the major D-Day. So the day is D-Day, and the hour is, they would call it H-hour. But this one, the June 6th, 1944, has become the D-Day, right. Even though every operation
there were lots
would
of
have. D-Days. There were tons of them, and tons of them before this one.
Here are all the beaches. Omaha Beach, Utah Beach, Gold Beach, Juneau Beach, and Sword Beach. All right. And I'm not going to keep on with this because there will be people who just aren't interested. Shame on you. You should be interested. This is, to this day, the largest invasion in history. The largest, what they call amphibious invasion, which means land and water invasion. The code name for the entire invasion was Operation Overlord. The code name for just the Omaha Beach thing was Operation Neptune. Again, I don't really know exactly why they were called that. I don't know that anybody does. You just have to grab a name and call it something. The exact number of casualties, the estimate is, in round numbers, 10,000 Allied soldiers. 6,603 Americans, 2,700 British, and 946 Canadians. In a broadcast message to the troops before they left, General Eisenhower said this, quote, "The tide has turned. The free men of the world are marching together to victory. We will accept nothing less than full victory." And overnight, this armada and more than 160,000 troops across the English Channel, they crossed England. Minesweepers went ahead early to clear the waters in preparations for the landing crafts. And between midnight and 8 a.m., they flew 14,674 sorties. And by 6:30 in the morning, the troops started coming on shore on a 50-mile stretch of beach. This is unbelievable to me. And for anybody not to be interested, I do understand it if you're young. I was young. I didn't care about it. I didn't bother to learn about it. Even though people like Mr. Burke, my history teacher, did their best to try to make us understand and learn, and you took tests and you passed them. But I've taken lots of tests in my life, and I don't remember most anything that was on any of them. You learn it to pass, and then you move on. But it is absolutely necessary to understand what happened and what could have happened if we had not been victorious. We'd be speaking another language. We would be living under in hell had it not been for these people. And I've listened the last day or two to a couple of the guys they've interviewed, these 100-year-old guys, and the ones I heard said the same thing. They were absolutely petrified. They were scared beyond anything you can imagine. And the one guy who's still alive said this. He said, when we stepped off those landing boats, it was exactly like hail. If you've ever seen hail hit water, that's the volume of bullets that were hitting. And if you were able somehow to not get hit, you had to just consider your time wasn't up, because all around these people, they just watched their buddies drop and go underwater, and blood, and the water was it was horrible. Watch Saving Private Ryan. If you only watched the first, I don't know how long the scene lasts with the invasion, watch until they storm the beaches, and that's about as realistic as I've ever seen anybody get it.
I think it's when they take the gun turrets is when that scene ends, and it's about 8 to 10 minutes.
And I think for as much as you might want to back out and be a coward, it's just too late. And I admire the people who admit they didn't want to be there. They were scared to death. But you now have no choice. Go after them. Go get them. And there's a good chance you're going to die.
Right.
But I think back then, unlike Vietnam, they didn't mind dying because they knew that it was for a good cause. And it would cause all the people who came after them and back home to continue to live in freedom. And it's just, and I wish I knew more. I'll never learn as much as I should about it, but I'm glad that in my later years, somehow or other, I found it necessary to try to learn all the stuff that I didn't pay attention to when I was younger.
Could you have done that?
I don't know the answer to that. I don't look, again, if I'm on the landing ship, I don't have a choice.
Yeah.
They said, by the way, here's another, this is disgusting, but it's important. One of the guys I heard interviewed, he said, one of the things that you never see depicted or talked about, he said, sitting in those landing ships before they drop that open gate. And gate, you are sitting and waiting in vomit.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Up to your ankles, because most of those guys are puking their guts out. It's so rough.
Yeah.
So not only are they going to face a hail of bullets, they're doing it sick. They're vomiting.
And the guys that are facing the door right there, when that door opens, you're the first ones out.
Yeah. I mean, you're probably going to get it.
Yeah.
And those boats, those landing craft, they were called Higgins boats.
Right.
They're made by and designed by a guy in New Orleans, and that now is that factory is now the site of what's the World War II Memorial. It was the D-Day Memorial Museum.
That was the other thing. It was unbelievable that back then he could knock out and what's the word? Assemble or build that many boats.
Shallow bottom boat that would be able to go fast.
Right.
And later on in his biography, President Eisenhower, it was General Eisenhower, said that Higgins, who designed that boat, was the main key to the success of that of those landings, because without the ability to have a low draft, shallow boat, there was no way to get those troops to the beach. Now, I'm sure there were other things that happened, but
yeah.
I think that everybody
but there were certain things think that, about that played a bigger role than others.
And yeah.
Higgins, his boats, without a doubt, played a huge role.
Absolutely.
In all of this.
And if anybody, you know, is really fascinated by the history and the actual scenery of that, not the depiction of the battle, which is unbelievable and almost perfect in Saving Private Ryan, but the movie The Longest Day,
yeah.
which was made, I think, in 1960, they go actually back to the very same places. And in that movie, those dummies that you were talking about, those fake paratroopers that had explosives on them or firecrackers, that's depicted and is in that too. So
I missed it somehow all these years. I missed that. Didn't even know until this morning. And I'm reading and I found out about these dummies they dropped. There was so much brilliance in the planning of this thing. And so you and I, folks, will never in our lives be as frightened, most of us, as every one of these men and women were. We will never be that scared. We'll never have to, you know, buck up and just forge. We'll never have to do that. I hope we never have to do it. I won't. I'm too old. I hope we, meaning anybody, future generation, the United States, never has to do it again.
Or be involved in something that important.
Exactly.
There's one picture earlier that I saw online, and I really hope it's real because it was incredibly powerful. It was, you know, I'm guessing after most of the action and the shooting has taken place and the Allied forces have moved inland, you can see amphibious vehicles dropping off women who were in the Red Cross,
right.
and they're jumping off the boat
right.
to go and help the wounded soldiers.
And a lot of them got killed, too.
They did, and I just, you know, I think that's something that deserves a mention.
It does.
That they were there as well.
No, it does, and there are a lot of people that get overlooked. This business of calling everybody a hero, I've said before, No, you know, and not all of these people who stormed the beaches, they weren't heroes either. They were doing what had to be done for the result we had to have. That was it. Now, in the course of that, yes, there were certain people who and there always are, who go way above and beyond just serving and fulfilling their military obligation. Like the guy who falls on a grenade to save his butt, that's a hero. That guy's a hero to me. Okay. And then we get down to the Scott Peterson thing, and this guy who's facing prison time for something that I'm still not convinced either way. I again, put yourself in his shoes. You're a deputy sheriff. I'm sorry, D-Day book, that's closed, okay? We've closed that segment, because I know that there are certain people. Okay, enough about D-Day.
To be honest, I'm a millennial, and I would like to, you've got 15 minutes left, maybe take a little break for traffic. I'd like to talk more about it.
Well,
the
guy to do it is Scott Sherman, because you've
heard
about everything
guy.
I know about it.
I got a couple British guys that Limey will like that I think were really important.
That's up to you, though.
We'll take a quick break. Let me do some, I think Dan was supposed to call John Londo.
Sent me a, he's in meetings, and he,
I get the honors.
Yes.
I will do
you
it.
Forgot to tell
I'll
you.
I'll be happy to do it. John Londoff's dad, was a Marine. John did not serve, not because he tried to get out of it, I think John was part of maybe the, lottery draft system or something. He had a high number. You know,
I think they had just stopped it before. Because John and I are the same age.
Sometimes people not serving and end up able to do things for the country and for other people that they wouldn't have been able to do. That's the way I look at it. I don't look down on anybody who didn't serve. I do think that the President of the United States, one of the requirements should be that you should have served in the military. I do. If you're going to be the Commander-in-Chief, I don't care if you're Bill Clinton or Donald Trump or whoever, if you're going to be the Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces, for goodness sakes, I think you should have served for at least a couple of years. But that's me. You don't. And there have been some presidents, I'm sure, who were very good commanders-in-chief who didn't serve. But back to Johnny Landolf, he's a patriot. I know that for a fact. He also was a really good car dealer who cares about the people who have given him and his family a wonderful life. And I, last night we had our get-together for our trip that's coming up to Europe, and I thank the people in the room who are going because they're representative of all of you, the people who have given me and now giving us the life, the career, the easy jobs that we have. And that's kind of the way he feels about people who buy new Chevys or pre-owned vehicles from him. All of you are the reason he's able to enjoy a really nice life. Not that he doesn't work hard. He works harder than I ever want to work. Ever. I hope I never have to work that hard. His name is Johnny Landolf. The dealer's name is Johnny Landolf. Dealership's name is Johnny Landolf Chevrolet. And you know where it is, where it's been since 1960. The Washington Elizabeth exit off Interstate 270 in North County. And 24/7 at Landolf.com.
Let's get a check on traffic right now with Tori Lyon.
Traffic sponsored by ZzzQuil Pure Z's. Only the left lane getting by a crash northbound 170 at the Forest Park Parkway. That's starting to jam east and westbound 64 ramping to 170. An accident eastbound 64 at Big Bend. Your stop and go westbound 64 Hampton most of the way out through Spady. Eastbound 70, you're backing up downtown through the depressed section. Worried about another sleepless night? Instead, try ZzzQuil New Pure Z's Melatonin Gummies. ZzzQuil Pure Z's are drug-free, and they help you fall asleep naturally and wake with no next-day grogginess. New ZzzQuil Pure Z's. I'm Tori Lyons reporting for 590 The Fan. Now back to the large morning show in the afternoon.
It's not summer grilling season until you hear the sizzle of quality Hatfield pork hit the grill while friends and family anxiously await their first serving. That's because Hatfield comes from pork experts who deliver easy-to-prepare varieties of deliciously marinated tenderloins, loin fillets, chops, and ribs. They come with a pledge to quality right on the package. And once they get a taste, everyone will be back for seconds. Get the pork that makes grilling more interesting at Schnucks and visit simplyhatfield.com for more info.
PetroMart is a locally owned and operated family business that's been serving the St. Louis area for over 30 years. Each location is just as clean, fast, and friendly as the next, with 50 locations to serve you. In a hurry? PetroMart offers a wide selection of grab-and-go food items, like hot and ready pizza or fresh fruit and salads. PetroMart has something for everybody, and it's always prepared fresh and available around the clock. PetroMart, a proud supplier of Phillips 66 gasoline and proud sponsor of the St. Louis Blues.
Well, we're not going to play the whole song. I just think you can never go wrong with a little bit of Lee Greenwood. God bless the USA.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life. And I had to start again with just my children and my wife. I thank my lucky stars to be living here today. 'Cause the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free.
You know, whenever there's a holiday or a special day, or there are songs written specifically Christmas, for example, White Christmas. Little Town of Bethlehem, and on and on and on. Until Lee Greenwood wrote this, and buddy, he hit pay dirt when he wrote this. We had the same, you know, God Bless America, America the Beautiful, but, and then boom! And there are other songs that have come, but this one now can be put right in there with those that were written decades and decades and decades ago. He really nailed it with the lyrics to God Bless the USA. Scott Sherman is here because every Thursday, and we're going to be doing it soon right after the 4 o'clock news, he's here to help you with your legal stuff and answer legal questions. But he's also somewhat of an expert. That's probably a word he wouldn't like.
A history buff?
But compared to most people, he is a history buff and somewhat of an expert. And my knowledge of D-Day or World War II or One or Vietnam is extremely limited, but I have tremendous appreciation. And before Scott speaks, let's talk for just a second about the Vietnam vets. There's going to come a time in 25 years or so when they're going to be saying, well, we have almost no Vietnam vets left. That's going to be a sad day. Let's not wait till then to acknowledge, again, people who did what they did because at the time, that's what the country asked them to do. So let's not forget that. And when you see, and there's still a lot of them around, they're my age, Vietnam vets, they got the caps, says Vietnam, thank them. Walk up and thank them. I've done it many times. They still don't expect it because of the way they were treated. So Scott, before we run out of time, anything else about D-Day that jumps out? Again, today I've shared with people three things I never knew till recently. The 1,000 dummies that were sent out in parachutes to throw off the Germans. The size of the beaches, 50 miles of beach. I never knew that. So maybe today at least somebody will walk away with something they never do. And tonight they'll say, you know, I never knew this. I was listening to 590 The Fan. Did you know that? Blah, blah, blah. That'll be a good thing.
A couple of things. Because D-Day is the most important day of the 20th century that I think is the most important century in the history of humankind. There were so many thousands of stories, but a couple stand out. One is a British guy, John Howard, who became a major in the Ox and Bucks, the 6th Airborne Division, the British. They were the very first ones in on the morning of June 6th, right after midnight, to secure a really important bridge called Pegasus Bridge near a city of Caen.
Listen to this guy.
I know, right?
He's not reading any of this. He's like a walking... This is an old term. He's a walking encyclopedia. This. Some people don't know what that is. He's a human internet when it comes to this stuff. Go ahead.
And he and his group came in on 3 or 4 gliders in the night with absolutely no light whatsoever.
To deliver and drop equipment.
Well, right? No, they were there to seize this bridge that was very heavily guarded by the Germans. And okay. It was a complete surprise. They come in, and there's almost no way to land this properly. And one of the gliders crashes because you can't really control a glider. And the first casualty of the day in the morning is a British pilot. But John Howard and his group, they take this bridge just with machine guns and a couple of hand grenades and maybe one mortar, and they hold that bridge all night, even with a German tank counterattack. And it's one of the most fantastic and successful operations, not only of D-Day, but of the war. And important because that bridge was one of the main places where the Allies were worried that General Rommel would have a counterattack, because he was a great military commander with his tank divisions, his panzer divisions, and they not only held that bridge for reinforcements, but they did it with almost no weapons at all. So John Howard, that was amazing. And they knew that they were getting reinforcements because they heard bagpipes coming in the distance. And they actually had a guy whose name is Bill Millen, who lived until 2010, who was the bagpiper of the Ox and Bucks, and they came from Sword Beach, which was one of the British beaches, and came and met them at Pegasus Beach with the bagpipes. And John Howard's famous for saying, "What took you so long?"
Wow!
And that was a really important. Also, Len Lamell, who was a sergeant in the 2nd Rangers, U.S. Army. If you've ever heard President Reagan's speech in 1984. On D-Day, called The Boys of Pointe du Hoc, that was written by Peggy Noonan. It's one of the greatest speeches by one of the greatest speech makers of all time. And Len Lamell and the 2nd Rangers climbed up those cliffs, 100 feet high, German fire, and took not only the cliffs, but they were supposed to take out some German 88 guns, which were trained on Utah and Omaha Beach on each side. And the guns were gone. But they went back in and found these guns, and beyond what they were ever ordered to do, and they took those guns out and saved tens of thousands of lives, maybe the entire force. And then last, not least, obviously, With the 82nd Airborne and the 101st Airborne, if anybody knows the Band of Brothers book and the Band of Brothers stories about Easy Company, it wasn't just Easy Company, and it wasn't just the 101st. But what they did that night, going into flooded fields with no really anything but moonlight, and it wasn't that good, with nothing but clickers in their hand, like a cricket clicker,
right,
to meet up with each other.
I do remember the clickers.
And secure that. The clickers were designed to, you know, they would either say flash or thunder, but who knew what to say what when somebody's clicking a weapon at you?
Right.
They'd have these clickers, one click, and then the response was two clicks. What these guys did, and you know, Dick Winters was the head of Easy Company. He was a lieutenant at the time and went on to become a major. What those guys did in the middle of the night to secure those exit heads of the beach, while the 29th and the 1st Army and all the other guys were on going through Omaha and Utah, it was astounding. And the Canadians deserve credit too, but without those, just pointing out those three guys, I just think that the day doesn't go by the right way. And there was an actor, a British actor, I just can't remember his name right now, but he was actually part of of Major Howard's group, and he went on, and in the movie The Longest Day, he actually, it's not Richard Burton, but he actually plays...
Is it Audie Murphy?
No, he's a British guy.
Okay.
He actually plays Major Howard, and he was in the war and fought on D-Day at Pegasus Bridge. So
Audie Murphy was an actual...
Audie Murphy was a
Congressional Medal of Honor winner.
He was a Medal of Honor winner and one of the first World War II Medal of Honor winners and one of the most unbelievable people of all time. Let's see. I'm trying to find Major Howard's guy. I get it here.
You're fine. You got 2.5 minutes before we stop the hour.
Where's that time passing music? Well, he looked
at the time passing music.
That Jeopardy music.
There you go, bud. I didn't know if I should.
Folks, we've learned a lot today.
Yeah.
About D-Day.
Hold on one second. I'm going to get it right here. And then
which I think.
Actually, look. This is the one thing I'm looking up. Richard Todd. The actor Richard Todd.
It's the only thing you didn't know.
No, just and I knew it off top of your head. Richard Todd was an actor. And he played in The Longest Day, and he played Major Howard, and he was actually one of the soldiers, British soldiers, that came to relieve them with the guy Bill Millen, who was the bagpiper. So,
yeah, folks,
all of that together, and I think Richard Todd is played by Sean Connery in that movie.
I think you might be right.
There you go.
So he's not just an attorney. He's like a historian.
Scott Sharpie, you deserve a round of applause. You didn't read a word of it. No, you have to have somebody in your family or in your sphere that is as passionate. I mean, not everybody can, but to me, that's the most important day of the 20th century. Because I'm going to tell you this. You know, you said how life would be different and this and that. I would not be here at all, and neither would any of my people.
That's true.
And I'm very proud of my grandfathers who fought and their brothers who fought in that war.
Okay, well said. We'll do a little business here. I just ordered 3 toilets from the Thompson Price existing showroom. They are, all the toilets now are higher. They used to be real low.
The comfort heights.
Oh, got 3 of them. Because they're selling comfort off the height stuff at the Thompson Price showroom. So I save a few bucks. And we have one in our house. And I told my wife, I said, one of these days, we're going to replace some other toilets. These things are fantastic.
They're the best.
They're the best. And we're also getting, we have one in the house that has tornado flush. Like on a cruise ship or an airline or a commercial airliner. And so of the 3 we're getting, one of those will have tornado flush. I'm kind of excited about this. But my point is this. Thompson Price Kitchens Baths, they are in the process of building a brand new showroom in Chesterfield Valley. But at the current showroom, do not put off your plans to remodel your kitchen or bathroom, because at the current showroom, a lot of money to be saved on a lot of stuff. It's in De Pere, less than a quarter mile east of 270 on Manchester, right next to McAllister's Deli. Get out there and take a look at all that fantastic stuff, because you can save money on any of it. They don't want to move it to Chesterfield Valley. Thompson, he was there last night, Thompson Price and his wife, going on his, I don't know, Dan, fifth or sixth trip with us, something like that. Website's easy. It's ThompsonPrice.com. Coming up after the news, Scott Sherman, attorney at law, to help you with, well, what you might think is something you need a lawyer's advice about. And it's all free. It's 4 o'clock at 590 The Fan.
This is Charlie Marlowe. You're listening to 590 The Fan, KFNS Wood River, and 590TheFan.com St. Louis, the home of Budweiser.